Alex Scarborough, we're here to discuss what you've called college football's most explosive story of the year.
Yeah, I definitely did expect a good old-fashioned war of words between college football's two most prominent coaches during a random week last May.
Alex Scarborough is a college sports reporter for ESPN.com. So, Alex, describe for us the moment that kicked this whole thing off.
Yeah, it's Nick Saban with a live microphone in his hand, but it's not what you'd expect in terms of a post-game news conference where we get those epic rants that we see on YouTube and on TV all the time. It was supposed to be very low-key, this fireside chat where Nick Saban and Alabama basketball coach Nate Oates are swapping stories, answering a few innocent questions. But it was a softball question about name, image, and likeness deals in college sports that got this whole thing started.
The issue and the problem with name, image, and likeness is coaches trying to create an advantage for themselves. That's not what name, image, and likeness was supposed to be. That's what it's become, and that's the problem in college athletics right now. And now every player is saying, well, what am I going to get?
It turned into must-see TV or viewing for all of college football, particularly college coaches. I heard from people across the country about them tuning in to watch Nick Saban's comments in disbelief.
I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
But the thing that really supercharged the moment was the following day where Jimbo Fisher called his response or retaliatory press conference, which was live streamed on Twitter.
It's really despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen.
Everyone was watching it. Everyone was dumbfounded.
Jimbo Fisher declared war against Nick Saban. He flat out went to DEFCON 1 and said, we're going nuclear.
I think Jimbo has every right to defend himself, and this is personal.
He looked at Nick Saban and said, you're a fraud. You're a liar. You may be a cheat.
Nick Saban made a huge mistake. These were reckless accusations that were made.
Alex, this felt like it was personal, but was this about Nick Saban versus Jimbo Fisher here, or was this about something more?
As you talk to people close to the program, they'll point out that Jimbo Fisher's name was not brought up. This was never about Jimbo. This was never about Texas A&M. This was about Alabama grappling with its standing and name, image, and likeness and trying to regain its footing as the top recruiting football powerhouse in college football.
Last May's war of words between Alabama's Nick Saban and Texas A&M's Jimbo Fisher dominated the conversation around college football for months. And the question hovering over the incident that entire time was simple. Why would Nick Saban do this? So today, now, a full year since the controversy began, ESPN's Alex Scarborough is here with surprising answers and explains why it all has Alabama feeling an unfamiliar emotion. Fear. I'm Israel Gutierrez. It's Thursday, May 18th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Okay, Alex, let's fill in the details on what was really going on with Nick Saban last spring when he took the mic and launched a litany of criticisms at Texas A&M. Just to start, what exactly was this event?
Yeah, a year ago this week, this was Nick Saban going driving an hour from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham for a World Games countdown event. Now, the World Games is this kind of aspiring to be the Olympics type thing where all these countries coming together and compete. It just so happened to be in Birmingham, Alabama, for this rotation. And Nick Saban was asked to come up and have a quote unquote fireside chat with Alabama basketball coach Nate Oates.
We're going to try to tell some stories. These two are going to talk with each other some if need be. I've got some questions here, and we're excited.
It's supposed to be a hour-long event, answered a litany of questions, talked about their lives, a very low-key type atmosphere to preview this World Games that were to commence in about 50 days.
Discuss with me the power of the word team.
Well, the first thing I'll say is there's no I in team. You've always heard that one, right? But there is an I in win.
So this was just a geographic coincidence. It had nothing to do with college football whatsoever.
Exactly. It was such a low-key event that a number of media did not even attend. For one, because of the timing and the reason for the event, but also the fact that this was supposed to be a limited media event in terms of what they could actually record. This was supposed to be only be maybe the first 15, maybe the first half hour where cameras were supposed to be on. By the time Nick launched into his 7-minute diatribe on NIL, this is the back end of the event. The red dots were not supposed to be flashing. They were not supposed to be recording. This low-key event was supposed to come and go in the middle of the night. It definitely didn't go that way, though. It was a softball question about NIL that got this whole thing started.
How do you feel about the way Alabama's attacking that right now? And for people that want to help, or how are you approaching name, image, and likeness with your program?
Yeah, I mean, it's all new. So we've kind of figured it out on the fly, I think.
Nate Oates answered it first, but as watching Nick Saban, you could see that he was eager to jump in. He's tapping his foot. He's looking around. He's ready. And before Nate Oates can get the microphone from his chin to his lap, Nick Saban is off and running on a 7-minute diatribe.
One of you folks are going to give some player that comes to our school a bunch of money to come to our school. And then he's not going to play, and he's going to transfer, and you're going to say, I'm never going to do this again.
The headline being him accusing Texas A&M of buying every player in his top-ranked recruiting class.
I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
Obviously, it all did get recorded and was released to the public. What went wrong there?
This was just a simple case of somebody dropping the ball. Not to have too bad a pun on a sports podcast, but nobody told the media in attendance to put their cameras down. Nobody said, don't put this out for the whole world to see. And by the time it was out there, and there was nothing to be done about it.
So when we in the public heard these comments, they sounded very critical of Texas A&M, as if he was accusing them specifically of maybe violating rules in some way, or at least violating what Saban considered to be the integrity of the sport. So tell me about Jimbo Fisher's response.
Oh boy, he went personal.
I always said this, my dad always told me this, when people show you who they are, believe them. He's showing you who he is.
He proceeded to call his former boss a narcissist.
It's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen.
Saying that the whole veneer of Alabama, the whole holier than thou, we recruit players on the top level, insinuating that none of it was completely as above board as Nick Saban and others have suggested.
The parody in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parody. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. Listen, you coach with people like Bobby Bowden and learn how to do things. You coach with other people and learn how not to do things. There's a reason people don't go, I ain't went back and worked for him.
I think he was very hurt by the fact that this was his former boss doing it. making these comments.
Listen, I'm going to tell you one thing. You can call me anything you want to call me. You ain't calling me a cheat. I don't cheat and I don't lie. So I learned that when I was a kid. If you did, the old man slapped you side of the head. Maybe somebody should have slapped him.
I think he was offended by the fact that it came off as his staff, him and his assistant coaches, didn't do the work, that the NIL did all the work and they signed all these players.
You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. And they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken.
He made all of these comments that I'm telling you, all of college football stood up and said, holy cow, I did not expect him to go there.
Yeah, and it's important to point out that it wasn't just Texas A&M that Saban called out. He made comments about Travis Hunter, a top recruit landing with Deion Sanders in Jackson State. He said Miami was using NIL money to lure in recruits to their basketball program. And he expressed dismay that no one was stepping in to stop any of that. But when you think about the fact that Saban never expected anyone else to hear any of this, does that change the meaning of his words to you?
I think the point there is who's in the room, right? The people in the room were wealthy businessmen who were basically Alabama's pool of boosters who are supposed to be sending money to players via name, image, and likeness mm-hmm. and trying to influence them about, hey, we're not on the footing we need to be. We're not spending the money we need to be. What went unsaid there, as you talk to people close to the program, is that Alabama, because of all the winning that it had done under Nick Saban since 2009, all the multiple national championships, there's a little bit of a sense of complacency, a little bit of a sense of, look, we've already won. We've already spent the money via coaches' contracts, via facilities, via all these things. You're asking us to spend even more on this thing that we know nothing about. Remember, name, image, and likeness at this point is only months old. And you're saying we've got to spend more money to continue to be the best? It's a hard message to get through. And that's why I think Nick Saban was so pointed in his comments about singling out A&M. Was saying, look, you've got a team within our own conference, within our own division that's out there doing the things necessary to sign the top-ranked recruiting class. If you want to keep up with them, you got to get the checkbooks out.
Right. So the rules were reset and Alabama all of a sudden wasn't on the top, as it were, when it came to recruiting. So at this point in time, what was the state of Alabama's NIL strategy? How are they doing compared to these other schools?
There were slow playing things, to be honest. I think there's a reason for it. I think there's a pragmatic approach that was taking place between Nick Saban and Alabama Athletic Director Greg Byrne, really the whole administration, saying, look, the NCAA has released all this guidance on NIL, but it's very fluid. We don't know what's really against the rules, what's really within bounds. If we go too far, we're going to get hurt in the long run because the NCAA is going to come back and penalize us. So they were trying to be more cautious at this point. But because of that, there were other schools out there like A&M, like Miami, you know, go on and on down the line, who are not as worried, who are going full force, who are putting their pedal to metal in NIL and really getting those players that maybe without it, they don't sign.
I was going to say, because you mentioned the complacency thing, and this, it felt like very much Saban coaching. He's coaching up these boosters, is he not? Like, this is a new system, and this is how we have to attack it, right?
He's been upfront very much about the fact that he thinks NIL should be this pure version of what it is, which is essentially endorsement deals.
Name, image, and likeness to me is a great concept for players. Players have always been allowed to work. This is just a different opportunity for them to make money by working and using their own name, image, and likeness, whether it's signing autographs, whether it's doing commercials or ads for some company or whatever.
If you come and you succeed, you'll be a marketable figure and you'll make money from outside, from, you know, think Bryce Young getting a deal with Nissan after winning the Heisman. But what it turns out to be is an enticement. It turns out to be, if you're a 4 or 5-star recruit and he wants you to come here, we're going to make these promises about what NIL is. And you're going to essentially earn a salary.
It's not supposed to be something where people come and make money. And you make a decision about where you go to school based on how much money you're going to make. You should make a decision based on where you have the best chance to develop as a person, as a student, and as a player.
Now, what he was saying to those boosters in the room was that this is the way it is. Like it or not, college football is not changing. The NCAA is not stepping in. They're not enforcing this rules about inducements or enticements. So as long as that's the state of play, if you don't want Alabama to lose recruits, because that is going to happen over NIL if we don't spend like they do, you guys need to get involved. So this is Nick Saban delivering a message. And it's funny, I spoke to former Alabama quarterback Greg McElroy about this same thing. And he talked about the, you know, why the message was so pointed toward Texas A&M. And what he told me, he said, look, what Nick says in public versus what he says in private, the essence of that message is normally exactly the same. It's the tone. It's the words he uses that changes. And think about a locker room speech. There's more pointed language than what you'd see in a press conference, but it's the same message. Him singling out Texas A&M was not intended, but him doing that was for impact. It was for effect. So really, it's just become about coming to grips with reality for Nick Saban, coming to grips with the fact that the NCAA is powerless to stop this. And Congress is not acting or has not acted in terms of putting some guardrails on this. And what's interesting is this is not unlike other things that have happened in the past. I had another coach in the SEC bring up to me the spread up-tempo offenses and how they took over college football over the last decade plus. Mm-hmm. People forget that Nick Saban was dead set against that. He hated the no huddle. He asked very famously, is this what we want football to be? Everyone crushed him for it. And eventually he decided, okay, this is what you want football to be. So let me go get Lane Kiffin, who just got fired at USC and is one of the most brilliant minds, offensive minds in college football. Let me task him with building the kind of offense I hate. What happens? Alabama builds one of the best offenses in college football, gets quarterbacks like Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, Mac Jones, Bryce Young, and it becomes this offense. So this is a pattern for Nick Saban. This is saying, I don't love it, but if it's what I need to do to win, that's what we're going to do.
So how much did this actually level the playing field for Nick Saban? Did this actually put him down with the rest of the coaches, or is this Nick Saban just trying to find his way back to his severe advantage, if you will?
This is fighting over fractions. This is what happens when you have a personality that is not willing to accept anything less than championships, that's not willing to accept anything less than domination. This is Michael Jordan. This is pick any kind of winner at that level. They're not going to be happy with anything less than dominating. And that's what Nick Saban is, especially when it comes to recruiting. And there's a famous story, former athletic director, Alabama athletic director Mal Moore, tells about bringing Nick Saban from Miami to Tuscaloosa. And Nick told him, you didn't just hire the best coach in college football. Don't expect that. You hired the best recruiter. And Nick Saban is all about assembling talent and doing everything he can to put the best players on the football field. So if he's number two instead of number one, he's not going to be happy. If he's getting recruits coming into his office and saying, I need this to sign here in terms of NIL, and he can't offer it, it's not a good place for him to be. So that's where this is coming from. This is coming from a guy who's maniacal about getting the best players on his roster. And if there's anything standing in the way of him doing that, he's going to find a way to make it work.
After the break, how Alabama has tried to regain its recruiting advantage in the NIL era.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Okay, so that was last spring, as we've established. So when Saban tells his boosters and administrators, hey, we need to make some changes around here, what does that look like? Give me an idea of what's changed on the ground in Tuscaloosa over the past year or so.
A lot has changed. Alabama's NIL infrastructure, their spending, all of it has transformed dramatically. If you take a hard right off of the street into Bryant-Denny, you can enter through what's called The Authentic. It's a fancy name for basically a merchandise store. And now you can walk in there. This is that partnership with Fanatics where their jerseys for players with their names on. Again, before NIL, this doesn't exist. And now they're selling it in the stadium where a portion of profits go to the players whose names are on those jerseys. There's a signed autographed pictures of Alabama wide receiver Ja'Cory Brooks, who's expected to be a starter and a big contributor this year. $199 you want to spend on that?
Wow.
Ja'Cory gets a piece of it. And then you walk on the field, and what's changed from the 2022 signing class to the 2023? They went from number 2 to number 1. They signed the most ESPN 300 players in any single recruiting class ever. You look on the field, they have a bunch of really good, really young talent that NIL and the developments they made can be attributed to, in addition to what Saban and his staff has done. The players, the infrastructure, everything's changed, everything's improved.
Okay, so they've recovered. They've returned to the number 1 spot in the recruiting rankings. But Alex, it's kind of surprising to hear that Alabama was struggling with this at all, because we've all just gotten so used to them being better at everything. And yet, you noted in your ESPN.com article something that had never occurred to me before. It's a structural disadvantage that could continue to make it harder for Alabama to compete on the NIL front. Can you tell us about that?
Alabama just doesn't have the same donor base in terms of money, in terms of size, than a lot of these others. Texas A&M kind of have. Both of those schools are bigger in terms of their donor bases and the money they're bringing in annually. It's a voracious football state. Alabama is not the biggest state, doesn't have the most money, and it doesn't have the most graduates with a ton of money to put toward football. So while that hasn't been a thing hampering them in the past, when you bring NIL into the equation and it's such a direct link between spending and success in recruiting, Alabama is no longer number 1 in both of those.
Right. It's almost as if Nick Saban is trying to convince his donors that Alabama is not above money and that you are going to have to compete with all these other rich franchises, if you will. But Alex, in what areas does Alabama maybe still have a recruiting edge that others don't?
Championship rings and NFL. I think those are the two things, the brand of Alabama. That's championship rings. That's being a national program that over the last 15 years is one of the most recognizable in sports. So you have that behind you. And then you also have the back end of it, which is NFL. Alabama's had more first round picks than anybody since Nick Saban has gotten there. They keep a running tally of the total amount of money that Alabama players under Nick Saban has made in terms of NFL contracts. And that number is creeping quickly up to $2 billion. Oof. So the pitch that Nick Saban is making, and I think it's a pretty smart one, I've heard from multiple people, the figures are always a little bit different, but it's essentially this. Do you want to make an extra $30,000 in NIL to go to school X? Or do you want to make an extra $3 million by coming here and going to the NFL?
Yeah. Do you want to be the player that tips that $2 billion number? Because it's currently at $1.94 billion, the amount of money earned from those draft picks. It's mind-boggling. But I want to turn away from Alabama's NIL insecurities and turn back to what played out publicly between the Crimson Tide and Texas A&M. As I understand it, all parties did eventually come together to try and reconcile this dispute, correct?
Correct. It didn't happen in person until a few months later. The SEC holds its annual spring meetings at the lovely beaches in Destin, Florida. So it was a great environment to kiss and make up. So they all met there at the Hilton and they all got together and Nick tried to smooth things over. And both coaches spoke to the media during that event and said, we've put all this behind us. We're good.
I should have never really singled anybody out. You know, that was a mistake, and I really apologize for that part of it.
It's tough to believe those comments aren't still holding some weight behind closed doors and on the recruiting trail. This is not something that's gone away, and I don't think it's something that will necessarily go away for quite some time. I was in Tuscaloosa when Texas A&M came to Alabama to play them last October. And that pregame environment was as good as any I can remember in a long time.
Well, there's 100,000 that are ready for action in Tuscaloosa. We are as well.
A lot of cameras trained on will Nick Saban and will Jimbo Fisher meet on the field before the game and shake hands. They did. They continued to make nice publicly.
Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban had a handshake, but it wasn't a love fest. Let's put it that way, and it didn't last very long. So that was just a few minutes ago.
But once that game started, it had an energy that I don't think many people really expected, and it was a game that was very competitive.
One play for one monumental upset for the Aggies.
Texas A&M had a chance to score and win at the very end.
King to throw for it to the corner. Incomplete. Alabama survives at home.
And you could tell Jimbo Fisher wanted. You could tell when that pass fell incomplete at the very end at the goal line. And he goes over his quarterback and asks him, what the heck were you seeing? What was going on there? He really wanted that one. He wanted to beat Nick Saban 2 years in a row. And it's hard to imagine that Saban's comments, whatever he said publicly after the fact, that didn't play a role in it. And you talk to coaches around the league off the record, and they will tell you, no matter what they say publicly, this is not going away. These are two of the biggest egos in the sport, and they want to beat each other. And that those comments last May were just bleeding over into publicly where people could see how competitive they are, both in recruiting and on the field. So I expect Alabama and Texas A&M, the fact that they continue to play in the same division helps. They're going to continue to be at each other's throats, not just in recruiting, but when they meet in College Station next year and when they rotate every single year for the foreseeable future.
Well, who knew coaches fighting over fractions would be this spicy, Alex Scarborough, but it has been, and I'm glad they went at it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I'm Israel Gutierrez. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.